welcome to Consumer Defense Line on 1520 WCHE. Consumer Defense Line is hosted by consumer lawyer Michael P. Forbes and addresses your rights and concerns as a consumer. Have a question? Give Michael a call at 610-701-9243. Now, here's your host, Michael P. Forbes.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Consumer Defense Line. We're getting a little bit of a late start here this morning on a beautiful day in downtown Westchester, and it is gorgeous out. So for anybody who wants to get out and have a good time, come to Westchester. It looks like there's an outdoor market. This is a big week. We caught Osama bin Laden. Well, I didn't catch Osama bin Laden, but he was caught.
Hey,
he was caught. I thought about catching him, and I think I should get that award. And I don't know if you know this, but does anybody remember that there was this guy last year that went over to Pakistan with a sword? Jamie, you might know this, and we'll introduce you in a minute. He goes, I don't know why you might know it, but he goes over.
Jamie?
We just, random thoughts. He goes over with a sword, a pistol, night goggles, and a flashlight.
I do remember.
Yeah, well, he went into the mountains in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and he was looking for bin Laden, and he claims that he drove him into the city, and he should get part of that $25 million reward that was out for him.
Well, wait, but he drove him into the city, but did he capture him?
Well, no, but he said he was part of the capture, so he only wants part of the reward. The problem was that they found out is that Osama, or bin Laden, he's been there for 6 years. Way before this guy went into the mountains.
Yeah, but this could be a consumer issue, don't you think?
I think it is a consumer issue,
like
and I think that we have the right person to sue the government to get the $25 million reward, and our special guest today, Larry Rubin. Larry, how are you?
Fine. Good morning.
Good morning. You came out a little bit early, but that's great.
That's
and you're here with your son, Jamie. How you doing, Jamie?
Okay.
Okay, have you heard that? Good.
I don't think he expected to be included.
Nobody gets out of here without or unscathed, I should say.
That's true.
But welcome to the Consumer Defense Line, and we'll talk more about Larry later on because he has recently had a case affirmed by the Superior Court, which is the seminal case that me and several other consumer lawyers have been spreading around the state, walking into court and handing up the opinion to judges and say, I've finally been waiting for a case like this. So I've been trumpeting
your
glories
Larry.
Everywhere, Larry, and so have everybody else. Yeah, it's pretty funny. And then I'll tell you about the how I had a case against the guy that wrote the opinion for the other side, the memorandum for the other side of the case.
From Maskin?
Yeah. It was the lawyer who wrote it. He did a nice job on it. But when we went to court, he was misstating the outcome of the case, and he was misstating the basis of the opinion to the judge.
In Smith?
In Smith, even though he took credit for writing the oppositional memorandum against you, and it was hilarious because I knew your case inside out, and I said, Judge, you have a choice to believe him, the so-called author of the losing side, or me, who has a copy of the case for you right here. And guess what? Guess who won?
And that's why they call you Perry.
Yeah, Perry Como is more like it. Anyway, we have a call coming in here. And
we have Ms. Dana, who's going to be doing our mortgage update.
We have a real estate feature every week, and we do a little political feature. And a bottom feeder of the week, too. So just bear with that and feel free to add your 2 cents. Just try not
anytime
to use any vulgarities, profanities, or and don't criticize
I'll
me,
try
most
to contain
of all.
Myself.
Yeah, try I know, Larry, I can see. Strap him down to the chair. No, put something over his mouth there. Okay, Dana, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing great. What's going on in the real estate world?
Well, we're all still talking about Osama bin Laden, so who knows?
Who's going to market that house?
The man. You know what? That's like the biggest house in the neighborhood, Dana.
I know. There's a listing.
I'm sure there is.
Go for it, Dana.
If you get through the barbed wire and the horrible Pakistani police that see nobody knew he was there, which is mind-boggling.
You know, accordion wire is usually my first clue that something may not be that marketable.
Well, you know, Dana, it was said that there's always a house like that in every neighborhood, where there's a mean and nasty guy living there, and they had the meanest. You know what they were talking about? There was, if you remember the movie Sandlot, where the kids would play ball
with the balls
would go over the fence and that big dog would come out and take it. The kids in that neighborhood would play soccer, and the ball would go over the fence, and it would never come back. So that was the house with Mr. Nasty himself.
But I think they gave them money, which is the funniest thing.
They paid them for their balls.
Yes.
And last night NBC News had a feature about the pharmacy he had on that shelf in that room, including a male performance enhancer. So there you go.
Osama bin Laden had a male performance enhancer?
Oh, my God.
Apparently he did. I think it was some sort of local herbal thing that everybody knew about. And
Tiger Bomb.
Tiger Bomb.
Interesting that you know about that. So.
I was in India way back when.
That's
all
for
about
another
Tiger
show.
Bomb.
Okay, so Dana, tell us about the market.
Yeah, you got two
here,
minutes.
Not
there,
in,
okay, let me tell you about the market.
Not in Pakistan.
It just depends how you want to look at it. Our numbers are certainly off from where they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that first-time buyer tax credit from the first quarter of 2010 really spiked the numbers at this time last year. However, we had 619 houses sell since in the last 2 weeks in the Chester, Delaware, Montgomery County area. So
that's pretty good.
That's not a bad number.
No,
it's not a bad number. And it doesn't look like a bad number until you realize that 1,100 sold this time last year. But again, that was with a government stimulus program. So.
Well, but we got some encouraging numbers yesterday as far
as
employment and
gas
is coming down. So, you know, you might end up having a pretty good season.
Well, and here's the thing. These numbers tend to, after a certain point, not affect people who really need to buy and really need to sell.
Right.
I think those are the people who we're starting to see in this market.
Yeah.
They're not speculators. They're really serious. They got to get it done. They've waited as long as they could, and now they're getting serious. And interest rates are still ridiculous. They're under 4.75%.
That's incredible.
So,
well, Dana, other than the Bin Laden house, are there any other houses that you feature this week?
Well, this week being Mother's Day, I am being, not much going on tomorrow. However, what we are getting ready for is our company's Red Day. I don't know if you've heard of Keller Williams Red Day, but that's Well, again, what can I say?
Red
but
Day.
This is where we all turn. Now, please, we turn our attention to the community and collecting food for local food banks.
Oh, that's very nice.
Habitat for Humanity, cleaning up parks. So this Thursday, the 12th, you're going to see a lot of agents out there in red shirts.
Everybody, watch where you're driving.
That's what the red shirts mean. That's right. There's nothing political. It's all for the community.
That's good.
So there you go.
So there's going to be a lot of bad drivers out.
Yeah.
Dana, thank
please,
you so
please
much.
Please don't aim for us. We appreciate
See you on Red Day.
Take care.
You got it. Have a great week.
You
okay,
too, Dana.
Bye-bye.
Kenny.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hello, Michael.
How you doing?
Nancy, how you doing?
Hey, Ken, sir.
Before I get into my bottom feeder, I'd just like to say, grandparents just want to have fun.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. We have an announcement. We're grandparents, believe it or not, even though we're both 30, 31 years old.
I know, but we're precocious.
We started very young. We're precocious.
And I'll tell you, how about Nancy cutting the rug last week at the show?
Oh, yeah. The show was fantastic.
The show was great.
Your son, Randy, did such an amazing show. Robert Hazard would have been extremely proud and flattered. He was electric. It was
a great night.
Hearing Michael Pearson sing. That was an experience.
That
he did his usual good job hosting the show.
Yes.
But, Larry, we had there was a benefit show for Robert Hazard. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, sure.
Robert Hazard of the Heroes, and he passed away a couple years ago. So it was an intimate show at Chaplin's out in Chester Springs. And a lot of, you know, local musicians, a lot of guys that grew up in that era. Michael Pearson hosted it. Then he sang, was that Robert Hazard's song that he was singing, Ken?
Michael, yeah.
Yeah, he sang a song. He was complaining it had too many words in it.
And
he was right.
Too long.
But anyway, listen, it was a great night. But
thanks for getting us out there.
Hey, did you ever think it would be so easy? All we had to do is kill someone to get rid of Donald Trump.
Good point, Ken.
Don't get too comfortable.
Good point.
I mean, he's going to come back. He's coming back, unfortunately, I think.
So who do we kill this week to keep him shut up?
Oh, yeah. But anyway, the bottom feeder, it's got to be, once again, our friend Glenn Beck, the commenting on the president laying a reef at Ground Zero last Thursday. Oh, he found it very offensive. He was using words like he was spiking the football, just like pinning a medal on himself and taking a victory lap around Arlington Cemetery. The guy's crazy.
He is crazy.
He is really out there. In their eyes, this president will never do anything right.
No.
Or accomplish anything.
He does. Although he did get a lot of begrudging respect and kudos from, you know, the Republicans and the...
John McCain.
Boiner.
Yeah, Boehner.
Yeah, Boehner.
We call it something else here, but Boehner. I like that. Boehner got him.
Boehner.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'll never hear, they'll never talk about any of his accomplishments. And,
no,
you know,
they won't.
And here's a few, there's Louis Ledbetter Fair Act,
exactly.
Children's Health Insurance Prevention Act, tobacco regulations, yeah. Credit card reform, student reform, health reform, the new GI Bill, the Food Safety Act that he passed, yeah. Don't Ask, Don't Tell,
yeah.
The new START Treaty for nuclear weapons. Just to name a few, you know, it's this
it
very
amazing.
Impressive you knew that list, Ken. What do you reading there in front of
I get it off the internet, you know that.
The Phillies being in first place, I think it's all there.
hey, real fast, pitching, striking out 16 batters and losing the game.
Well, they were pathetic at the plate. I couldn't stand it.
Oh, boy.
It was horrible.
The show
but anyway,
went,
yeah, we're crashing very quickly.
Okay, and one thing real fast. I don't know if you caught this president's speech at Fort Campbell. It was unbelievable.
You know what? I'm going to see it on YouTube today. I didn't get to hear it. I just saw excerpts, and it was amazing.
Unbelievable.
I better get the tissues out.
Yeah. He does make me cry a lot.
Every time.
Can't help it.
Ridiculous.
The president moves me.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Well, Kenzie, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Give our love to everyone.
Yes, I will.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, happy Mother's Day to everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
Good
you very
point.
Much.
Okay. Happy
so
Mother's Day to Cass.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, Larry, they were two of our features. We have another one who calls in, also named
another Larry.
And Nancy and I had a little bit of a... parallel conversation, double entendres with the Larrys. And who cut? I think I had gotten in touch with the other Larry. She thought I was in touch with you. I thought she was in touch with you. She thought I was in touch with
the other Larry.
The whole thing was very confusing. So it was Larry Day.
Yeah,
it makes it more confusing. The name of the defendant in this case is Larry Smith.
Is Larry Smith.
Who's a woman.
I know.
I know. That's what Michael was
saying. That threw me, too.
What
I didn't
understand
that.
What is with all these Larrys?
That threw the court in the lower court and the appellate court as well.
I would imagine
I think, because I remember reading something about that, and even stranger than that is we have a local judge here, district judge named Larry Smith, our own venerable Larry Smith. Have you ever been in front of him?
No, I haven't.
He is quite the character and a really good guy. I really enjoy going to his court, but he's in Exton. So if you're driving 45 in a 25 zone, you will be facing Judge Larry Smith, who will not be very happy about it, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
But he's a good guy. And
I guess using the Larry Smith case is out with him, right?
No, you don't. Well, no, it's going to be in. It's funny you said, you know what, I haven't had one in front of him. I haven't had that, but Larry Smith was the victorious party in your case.
That's correct, yes.
I think he would enjoy that.
Yeah, but I doubt I can use it in a traffic case.
No, not in a traffic case. Yeah, you're probably, well, you know what? You might as well try.
I'll use it for everything.
Judge, I handled the Larry Smith
case. No matter what.
I was there. You know, I went down in Philadelphia a few years ago. Oh, my God, I can't remember her name, but she's a very well-known judge. And I just bought this purple tie, and I never wear colors like that. But I really liked it. I wore it once because Nancy was giving me a raft of stuff about it. And I walked into the court. It was Tama Myers Clark.
Did I
Judge
like
Clark.
The tie or I didn't like the
he
tie?
He just didn't like the fact that I was wearing a purple tie.
Oh.
And it was a beautiful tie. So I go in front of Judge Tama Myers Clark. I hadn't seen her in years. And she's wearing purple. And she goes, Mr. Forbes, you remembered.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, she goes, the purple tie is beautiful. Oh, yeah, Judge, I forgot it was her favorite color. Of course I wore that to court for you.
So, get in on that.
Like, what did I remember? Her name? That was barely there.
I've seen that reaction of yours many times.
Yes, the reaction.
Just trying to flow with it and not sure
how to put
sure
my Eddie
headed.
Haskell persona on there to throw it. Anyway, Larry, before Larry Wernick calls in, your practice is in media, right?
That's right.
And how long have you been in practice for?
31 years.
Wow. You don't look a day over 21 years of practice.
There you go.
And you do bankruptcy?
I do bankruptcy primarily. However, the other side of the practice has been growing steadily.
Which is what?
Consumer law, fair debt, and general defense of consumer claims and credit card and debt buyers and defending people who are being sued by them.
Well, I've looked at your website, and you have an incredible amount of information on there. In fact, I've learned a few things just going to your website, so we could put that on our website. Which actually,
nice.
I'm kidding.
None of that.
We didn't do that.
None of that is true.
It's all copyrighted. No, I've read your website. It's really cool. And do you find, because this is something we run into a lot.
Wait, I just want to give the number. Don't interrupt. But call in with questions is 610-701-9243. 610-701-9243.
And we're talking to Larry Rubin. He is an attorney out of media who primarily does consumer law.
Yep. Bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy is consumer law also.
Right, but if people have questions sometimes
they can ask about that. That's correct. Do you find that one of the things that we've kind of concluded in credit card cases is that people just have no clue what their rights are. So they just kind of fall to whatever the debt collector is saying to them when they call. They don't know they could have defended a lawsuit. They don't know, especially with a debt buyer suit, that they have a good shot at winning that.
They have an excellent shot at winning that.
I've never lost one of these cases.
Knock on wood.
I went yesterday. I was in Upper Darby in front of Judge Maddox, Chris Maddox, and it was Midland Funding on the other side. And I rarely bring my client in. One of the things you don't do is bring your client in on these cases because it's the only way they can even attempt to prove that, you know, they owe the alleged debt.
Your client is their star witness.
My client's their star witness. That's a good way to put it. Well, this lady wanted to be there, and she was there. So that was fine because she, you know, was going to say, this is not my debt. But you never know when they get on the stand and if they're being asked, well, is it possible, this, that, and the other. But what happened was the lawyer for Midland Funding brings four assignments. So the original credit card supposedly started with, I think, Citibank. It then went to Sherman Acquisitions. It then went to LVNV Funding. It then went back to Sherman Acquisitions. It then went to Midland Funding.
Now, exactly what are assignments for our
That's listener? When you supposedly sell the account. You're assigning it. You're selling it.
Okay.
So, but of course, on the assignments, it said it refers to the debts referred to in Section 1.2. Well, 1.2 wasn't attached, which it never is.
Mm-hmm.
And the lawyer for the debt buyer said, well, we have 400 pages back at the office, and I could have brought it in. I said, yeah, shoulda, woulda, coulda. Okay.
I'm sure the judge would love to read through 400 pages.
Well, but he should have brought it.
Yeah.
So I got it thrown out there, and I started chuckling, and Judge Maddox said, looked at me, he goes, what's so funny? I said, could you imagine, you do civil work, Judge, could you imagine walking into court, filing a suit, not having your client here to prosecute it, and coming in with documents like this that you can't even prove that you own the account that you're suing on? He goes, I know. I see this all the time. It's just confounding. And he says to the lawyer, he goes, I guess you guys just depend. You know, you depend on people not showing up or coming in and just admitting it's their debt without any documentation to show the accuracy.
It's smoke and mirrors litigation. That's what it is.
It really is, and it's disgusting. And then they come in and look at you like, you know, you did something wrong, like your client did. In fact, my client said that it wasn't her debt, so the lawyer pulls out a form to so that she could make a complaint for identity theft. And I said, there's no identity theft here. The only thing going on here is the fraud of your company bringing this case forward. You were defrauded. Don't be coming to us and putting some kind of burden on it, because she had already been through an identity theft report, and she said it went on for months. It froze her accounts, and she said she's not going through it again. So do you run into stuff like that?
Yeah, all the time. Companies come in, they have really nothing to show, nothing to prove. They depend upon your client showing up so they can call them as a witness. If your client doesn't show up, then there's really nothing for them to do. They can't prove anything. They try to get the documents in. The documents are often faulty, or they have huge gaps in proof, or the evidence is very, very flimsy. It's extremely flimsy. It doesn't arise to the level that it should, the preponderance level, which is more than 50%.
Well, as opposed to criminal law, where it's beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right. More likely than not.
Right.
That the person is liable.
But even if they ask the client, did you have a debt with Sears, let's say? Yes, I did. Did you have a credit card? Did you owe money on it? Yes, I did. Is it possible this is your car? Of course, I would object and say they're asking for speculation. But this invoice was to you, I guess. And I say to the client, well, tell me what your account number was. Tell me the 16-digit account number. Do you recognize it there? No.
How many bills do you get every month?
Yeah, how many bills? And exactly, that's a good point. So, you know, how do you know that that bill wasn't generated, you know, after the fact? Just like they bring in the, I love how they bring in the generic contract with a copyright of 2008 when they took the credit card out in 1999. It changes every year.
It changes every year. You get them in the mail. Those are the things that you throw away.
Yeah, the bill stuffers.
Yeah.
It's a fraud. I mean, it's just a total fraud. Well, anyway, we have Larry Wernick waiting on the line here with our political report. How you doing, Larry?
I am embarrassed to even tell you my first name.
I know. That's the Larry. The
so
Larry.
Feel free to refer to me as Lawrence A. Wernick III.
Now,
would that differentiate everybody else that's in your daily practice?
I don't know, but can I tell Mr. Larry Rubin here why you are Lawrence A.?
Feel free. Go right ahead, and I'll correct you.
I grew up with Larry, and Larry has a twin brother named Andy. And Larry was first to arrive, so he was A, and Andy was Andy B, and that's their middle names.
Well,
the third thing I don't know, but
actually, my dear old mom did not have names for us, so we were just.
She had names for you.
Baby
just wasn't
A
that.
And Baby B.
Oh my God!
Wait a minute!
God.
I don't think we knew
Big
that
Havertown thing. Scandal.
Yes, we were only known as Baby A and Baby B, and then they just stuck with the middle initial as A, which doesn't stand for anything. I have no middle name, and Andy is B, and he has no middle name.
It actually happened on my birth certificate too. It says Baby Boy Reuben on it.
Oh, it
and
does?
Then it's crossed out. And Lawrence was my mother couldn't think of a name.
So we got the two Larrys here. We have two babies.
Yeah. That must have been the long form.
Something in common.
Yeah, it must have been the long form. Right. Yeah. It was the long form.
Can you imagine if you wanted to run for president? That could really be a problem.
You know what, Larry Rubin? I'm not sure that's even you. I would like you to get that birth certificate and prove
I'll
it.
I'll never tell.
Yeah. That is hilarious. Both of you guys had that.
Yeah, and it's funny because I wanted to keep it going, and I wanted to give my daughters C and D, and Andy wanted to go for E and F and everybody else down the whole line of the alphabet.
Isn't this the Dr. Seuss story?
But we were overruled. We were overruled by our wives.
See, it always takes the smarter gender to straighten
things
out.
No, it takes saying yes to keep peace in the household.
Yeah, my mother had 9 months to come up with a name.
That's all.
Yeah.
Well, wait. Larry Rubin, when did your mother come up with your name?
I don't really know. I don't remember what was happening in the first couple of days of my life.
Before you went to law school.
Yeah, before I went to law school, she'd be, call him Larry.
And Larry Wernick, when did your mother come up with your name?
I think when we came home, because I came home...
like a month later.
I think like a month or two later, and Andy came home, I think, in February.
Oh,
wow.
Really?
Yeah, we were Halloween babies. So, yeah, we were in the hospital for some time.
Wow.
Boy, that's
early.
Explaining a lot of stuff that I didn't know over the last 50-some-odd years.
54 years.
Yeah. I've known you for about 54 years. Now I'm understanding certain
the
things.
The Wernick trivia.
Anyway, Larry, exactly. What's going on in the world of politics these days?
Well, it just so happened that the greatest criminal... the entire case was solved, and the greatest criminal out of this story, according to the Republicans, is Barack Obama, not Bin Laden.
Of course.
It was like he was the one that committed the crime.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's absolutely amazing.
And that was this week. Wait till next
week happens. When you take a look at the tepid response from some of the other Republicans, it was just a cameo statement about Barack Obama, and 98% of it, of the rest of the paragraph, was devoted to enhanced interrogation that led us to this, and the Navy SEALs and the Army and everything else, and Barack Obama just happened to be having lunch, okay?
He just happened to stop by at the
right time. Yeah. Hey,
what's
just
happening?
Do it.
Come on in. We have some things going on. Maybe you can give us some help.
It is amazing.
Yeah, like our Facebook friend who was kind of trivializing his decision there.
Yeah, he said it was the only decision he could make.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, could you imagine if Bush and Dickless Cheney were were running the show there?
Yes.
Yeah, how they would be trumpeting the glorification, the beatitudes on these guys.
You would think that there would be a fifth sculpture at Mount Rushmore. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. With that scowl behind Bush's head and Cheney's head there.
But it's really an embarrassment about our country when, you know, listen, no matter how you slice the pie up, okay, when the economy is good, the president gets credit. When the economy is bad, the president also takes the fall for it.
Mm-hmm.
When something good militarily happens, the president gets the credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, these Republicans are ashamed to admit that, you know something, we have a thinking man's president in this White House, something that eliminates 99% of all other Republicans.
Yeah.
Because they cannot fathom that we've got some guy that can actually think clearly and make a cogent decision without all the fanfare. And it's like Barack Obama is the one that should be going to jail.
That's exactly what even the first couple of hours after this occurred, it was like it rocked the Republicans back on their heels, and they didn't know what to say or what to do.
Right.
And they came out with a very tepid response. And then I think it was Lindsey Graham, I think he was actually the first one to come out and say, you know, the president did a pretty great job. So it's a very typical. I didn't expect anything less, but it was a fabulous moment.
I think it's more disturbing than really anything else, because it just shows that this country is so divided.
Yeah.
And it's not good for our country. It really is not good for our country. And you know, I don't have to, you know, wave my flag to pronounce my patriotism.
Right.
You know, but on the same token, he had a well thought out plan. The execution was perfect.
Yeah.
You've got the Navy SEALs that are the best trained military people in the world, and everything went like clockwork. Now, if you take a look at how George Bush handled everything, it was a complete failure from day one. He had 7 years, and you want to know something? In the third and fourth years, 2004 and 2005, he disbanded all the efforts to go out and search for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he decided it just wasn't that important.
It wasn't important. We're not going to devote the funds for it.
Right.
Well, he was able to avenge his daddy, and that was it. They got the wrong guy, and they empowered Iran because Iraq is no longer fighting them. That was keeping Iran at bay and keeping their nuclear power program under check.
And when you think about, you know, when you do a little juxtaposition here and you think about, you know, how many times we saw the president last week when this was going on underneath, you know, he had to show his birth certificate.
Yeah.
He went to the tornado site.
Right.
He did the White House correspondent dinner. He went on Oprah Winfrey. And this whole time, he's doing this whole thing.
And he knew this was going on.
I just think that they're calling this a victory lap.
Yeah.
Lest they forget George Bush flying in an F-15 on the USS Abraham Lincoln with mission accomplished behind him.
After he had that dumbest look on his, after he had the dumbest look on his face that I've ever seen in my life. With the elementary school students. I'll never forget that. And Giuliani, they, all of a sudden they were hailed as heroes just because they came there and look, they did a good job. We're here, we want to pull people together, so forth and so on, even though, you know, there was such a heavy political
they
agenda.
They showed up and didn't cry.
Yeah, that's a good
point. You know something? If I was there, I would have asked Giuliani one question. Because they all have the film clips, and Giuliani kept mentioning it when he was running for president.
Yeah.
When he was walking down 48th Street all the way down to the World Trade Center, he turns over to his police commissioner and says, you know something? Thank God George Bush is our president. Okay?
God.
That's what he said. So I would like to ask him, you know something, Rudy? Can you thank God now that Barack Obama is the president?
Sure. Right.
It's a horrible.
And to think that, you know, Barack Obama did extend his hand out to Giuliani and George Bush and also Bill Clinton to have them join him at the site, I thought was just another one of several class acts, this president.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But like I said, as a thinking man's president, 99% of the Republicans can't relate to that.
Or the country,
unfortunately. Was Bill Clinton available, or was he otherwise?
I think he had scheduling problems.
Yeah, that's what I think. Anyway, listen, Larry,
thank you
for calling in.
Always
good to talk to you. Thank you for that tidbit of information about your birth.
Thank you, Mom, and Pop-Up, and happy Mother's Day, Nancy.
All right,
hey, Larry.
Thank you, boy.
Take care.
Bye.
See ya.
That's too funny. Do you want to take a quick break, and then we'll come back with Larry Rubin, our guest?
Start your mornings with the all-new WCHE Morning Magazine. It's a healthy dose of all things Chester County and beyond. Local news, local traffic reports, local sports results, interviews with local newsmakers, and the local entertainment scene, plus national guests, along with whatever you're talking about around the water cooler, plus your phone calls. Hosts Doug Sterling and Bill Mason give you all the info you need to face the day with a smile on your face. Samantha Feeney provides her unique take on issues of the day and entertainment. And Pete Vasalli catches you up on the world of sports. That's the all-new WCHE Morning Magazine. Weekdays from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. on the talk of Chester County, WCHE 1520 a.m. and streaming around the world on WCHE1520.com. For a lighthearted look at issues affecting seniors, the baby boom generation and their families, including finances, care, the law, and decisions the over 50 generation face every day, tune into WCHE's 50 Plus Planning Ahead. The show is co-hosted by elder law attorney Janet Colleton and Phil McFadden, co-owner of Home Instead Senior Care. 50 Plus Planning Ahead airs Wednesday afternoons at 4:30 p.m. Janet and Phil will be joined by guests who will discuss what we do when we get older and how to assist our parents with their needs. So tune in Wednesdays at 4:30 p.m. for 50 Plus Planning Ahead on your home for local news, talk, sports, and entertainment, WCHE 1520 a.m.
Hi, this is Ron McNeil, and I host one of the most popular radio shows in Chester County between the hours of 10 a.m. and noon, Monday through Friday. It's called Ron's Swap Shop, and it's designed for you, the listening audience, who might have something around the house to sell, buy, trade, or just give away. The great part of the show is that it's all free. It doesn't cost you anything to list your things on the radio show or on the website. Just call in WCHE at 610-701-9243 and describe your item to me. I'll then post them free of charge on our website, WCHE1520.com, where they'll stay up there for a full 2 weeks. Remember the times, 10 a.m. till noon, Monday through Friday. Call 610-701-9243.
Now back to the Consumer Defense Line with your host, Michael P. Forbes on 1520 WCHE.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Consumer Defense Line. I'm your host, Michael Forbes, with my co-hostess, the lovely Nancy Forbes. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. I'm lovely now.
I can't say anything.
I've gone from beautiful to lovely to, well, there was another one.
But whatever it is, I'm constantly cat-sized for it.
Just not right.
And I can't say anything other than those kind of things.
You really can't.
You would be.
I feel your pain. Here's the number to ask some really great questions. 610-701-9243. Call in and ask some really... great questions to our guest.
Really
610-701-9243. I don't have my glasses on, so I'm not 100% right. Reading those letters right.
Okay.
Larry, you want to put your headphones on and get in the game here, buddy?
So, Larry, we have Larry Rubin here today, who is one of the premier consumer attorneys in the area.
I'm premier now?
You are premier. And
wow.
In 2 minutes, you'll be the number one guy.
Well,
and then the grand champion.
Supreme Court Justice.
Yeah. I'm not prone to too much hyperbole, but Supreme Court Justice, the Supreme Commander.
Attorney General of the United States, just
right.
Lay it on me.
You're moving up.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are not many consumer lawyers around. There really aren't. But what's interesting is that there are a lot, the Philadelphia area has probably some of the top consumer lawyers in the country, let alone in the state. So for you to have done what you did with this particular case is really, to me, quite an achievement. And it is just, as I said before, I bring this case into court with me all the time now. I bring a packet in, a folder, of all the cases, Atlanta County versus Giuliani, Target versus Samanez, your case.
There are actually not that many cases on this subject.
There's very few.
Yeah.
So what happened in this case? It was Commonwealth Financial Systems versus Larry Smith, who was a lady.
Right, right. It actually started with a woman coming into my office with a huge notebook full of materials, okay? And she was being sued by Commonwealth Financial Systems, which is a debt buyer. They used to be in Scranton. I don't know where they are now. And she lays this on my desk and she says, Mr. Rubin, I don't owe this debt, and this is the reason. And she plops this 6-pound notebook down on the desk, and I'm thinking, oh my God, here we go.
Yeah.
And I said, well, thank you, Mr. Smith. I'll be happy to represent you. And then she says, I know you'll do a good job, Mr. Rubin. And as soon as she leaves, I take the notebook and I put it on the shelf, and that's the last I looked at it. And I said, you know, I have to do something else with this case. And so we go to an arbitration, which in Delaware County, Chester County, you have arbitrations. This is actually a small matter. This is a $5,000 matter. It originally was Citibank or Chase. I don't even know.
So the debt buyer is suing over $5,000, and instead of going to small claims court, they start in the common pleas court.
I believe they had been to district justice court already.
Okay.
I was not involved at that point, but I think she came in and she had lost. But I'm not exactly sure because this is back in 05, actually. This started, I believe, in 06. It was actually going on for 5 years. There were many aspects.
Actually, 6 years because the Superior Court opinion just came out 2 months ago.
Well, it actually, there's a
hidden aspect.
Yeah, there's a memorandum opinion that came out in December. And that was withdrawn. In other words, it was withdrawn to make it an official reportable
right.
opinion.
Right.
So anyway, she goes to the district justice, she loses, and then she comes into my office with the notebook and all that. So I thought about it for a while, and at that point in time, there were other things that happened with the case. I appealed it. My appeal was actually dismissed for other reasons. There were mistakes made by the plaintiff. The plaintiff, who was Commonwealth, thought that I had not filed an appeal in time, but actually I did. This was like a foreshadowing of the problems in this case. When the appeal was filed, it actually sat on a clerk's desk, and then the clerk went on vacation and forgot to docket the appeal.
Was that the Superior Court
no,
appeal or the arbitration
appeal? No,
this was
in the Common Pleas Court.
So it was appeal. So just for our listeners, when you go from, you have 30 days to appeal a decision at the local district
court. That's right, yeah.
Then it goes to an arbitration panel in the Court of Common Pleas, which is usually 8 or 9 months down the road. Then if you lose at arbitration, you have 30 days to appeal it, and you're saying that that appeal, was it that appeal?
No, actually, she came in.
Because you wanted arbitration.
Right. She came in and she hired me, okay, and then she says, well, go and appeal this district justice. So I go and appeal it.
Okay.
You pay the Prothonotary in Delaware County, or OJS as it's called, money, and then they docket the appeal. Now, the appeal is a piece of paper. That piece of paper laid on someone's desk for several months was not docketed.
Not in Delaware County.
Right.
No.
Never happened.
They dismissed
our
my
people.
Appeal.
My favorite. I love Delco. Yeah.
They
yeah.
dismissed my appeal. It took me a year to get it reinstated.
Oh, my God.
It had to go to a judge, and I said, look, I have a timestamped copy.
That was it.
Yes, and during that time period, I was called a liar and a crook and all this kind of stuff. That's
by the debt buyer lawyer.
Yes, yes.
Right. You know what, just as an aside, I had something in Montgomery County, similar situation, where the prothonotary docketed my, they timestamped our paperwork on and had it stamped Saturday, a year before, at a time when the court would have been closed even if it was open during the week. So we got that, you know, same thing, same scenario, and we got everything reinstated. It's like,
well, that's not that's not really the point of the case. It got straightened out. We'll just leave it at that.
Right.
So it goes to an arbitration, and, of course, I do not bring Mrs. Smith to an arbitration.
Right.
As you know, you don't bring your clients to an arbitration because your clients are your worst enemy. She wanted to come in with the notebook and all that. I said, oh, thank you. You can hold on to the notebook.
Yeah.
And so we prevailed. Because Mr. Matzkin, Commonwealth, was not able to come in. They did not come in with any witnesses.
So what did they do? Did they, under Rule 1305, did they submit their documents?
I believe they did. There is a rule, 1305B, that says that certain types of documents can come in without further proof. And to tell you the truth, I don't actually recall what I said at that time, but it was enough to belie the documents. I don't actually recall what went on. I think the documents were not complete, or they were not trusted, or something like that.
Right.
There was a lack of foundation. And Commonwealth Financial Appeals. Now, it's not an appeal like to the Superior Court, an appeal. They call it an appeal, but it's not really an appeal because you get a new trial. So it goes to...
So you get, you actually at this point, it's three bites
bite.
Of the apple.
Yeah,
second
right.
bite in Common Pleas Court.
It's kind of ridiculous.
It is.
You keep going and going, yeah, and people think that they're done and they're all happy, and I go, oh, no, you know.
Yeah, they
you
got to
come back and do it again, you know.
Yeah.
And so it goes to the venerable Judge Burr in Delaware County, who's like a thinking man's judge.
He's a smart guy.
Right, yeah. He's a really smart guy. And Judge Burr, like any judge, is trying to settle the case before it goes to trial. And he says, oh, I think you should try to work it out. You know, how about you, Reuben? You know, give some money, you know. And I said, there's nothing here, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. This is a woman who was in Chester who was, like, I think about 70 at the time.
Oh, boy.
I hope she's not insulted. Maybe she was younger. I don't know.
No, you ask her what year she graduated high school, and we get around that one.
There was just no money there.
Yeah.
And besides, I kind of wanted to see what would happen, you know,
right. Sure.
Out of curiosity.
Sure.
So we go to trial, and he brings in a witness, Mr. Venditti. Danny Venditti. Danny, the famous Danny Venditti.
Who they used in another case, and now they're not using him in this other case.
Oh, really?
I'll tell you about that.
He got fired?
No, I don't think he did. They used him at an arbitration. Now your case came out, and now that got appealed, and they're bringing in somebody else to testify.
Well, what's a Danny Venditti?
He is
what's
the...
What's a Danny Venditti?
What's a headway? He was the custodian of records, I think.
No, he was actually a vice president. He had, you know, thought a lot about himself and about his position in the company, and I'm sure he did fine because Commonwealth, I don't think, would keep him on if he wasn't competent. So I'm sure he did his job well, but he knew his job, just like we know our jobs,
exactly.
And we don't know what is not our job. So, I mean, this was not exactly the Renaissance man that they brought there, you know. Mr. Venditti came and he testified at trial as to what he knew.
Which was?
Which was Commonwealth's records. But unfortunately, Commonwealth's records were purchased through at least two other parties. So in other words, Citibank or the original creditor, I forget, Chase, Citibank, whoever it was, sells it to a dead buyer. And they don't just sell that account. They sell thousands of accounts. It kind of gets lost. It's whose account is whose. It's kind of like the mortgage securitization thing where you don't know if your mortgage is part of 10 million other mortgages. So they sold thousands of accounts to a company called NCO, and which is a famous debt buyer. And then NCO, I believe, and I could be mistaken about this, it could be the same company even, sold it to NCOP, and I don't even know what that stands for. Don't even ask. And
we won't.
We're trying not to.
And
does he say that to you, Jamie? You know? Don't even ask. My wallet's safely locked away somewhere.
Right, go ahead. I say that a lot. NCOP eventually sells the array or the portfolio, as it's called, to Commonwealth Financial. Commonwealth Financial is in the business of buying thousands, millions of debt accounts, and they buy it for pennies on the dollar. It's almost pure profit.
Mm,
yeah, it's virtually costless. You know,
right.
You could buy $1 million debt for $1,000 or $100 debt for a buck. This is about what they're doing. So they buy all these accounts, and then they do the shotgun. They sue on everything.
Hmm.
They may call you first. They may not. They sue on everything. And most of the time, people default because most lawyers think that there's no defense, and most people don't understand it. Not that I think they would understand it. That
right.
They're just
when you look at the county dockets, I was showing it to some new clients the other day. I said, I just put in one company, and portfolio recovery, and there were just dozens and dozens of lawsuits over the last few weeks in each county, and then I showed them like from 2 months before, they all ended up in default.
Right, that's how they run.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for defaults, if defaults didn't exist, the companies wouldn't exist.
Exactly. So getting back to the case then, the crux of the case came down to Mr. Venditti trying to authenticate the documents that Commonwealth was introducing into evidence to try and prove that, you know, the accuracy of the alleged debt and the fact that, you know, they own the debt and this was now their account.
Right. It was basically Mr. Venditti testifying to the validity of these debts. Now, I'm sure that Mr. Venditti never saw the Smith account before, was just talking about accounts in general. It was the same testimony for every account. So he gave his standard canned testimony. So the cross-examination that I used was something like, have you ever worked for the original creditor, Citibank or whoever? And he says, no, of course not. I'm vice president of Commonwealth. Do you know anything about the computer records of the original creditor? No, I know about the computer records for Commonwealth. I said, do you know how they were stored? Do you know if there was antivirus? Do you know if they were compromised? Do you know if there was a hacker? Do you know anything about it at all? And he's going, no. But I know that they are SAS 70 qualified. So Judge Burr says, what's that, an airline?
Good question.
So he says, no, it's the standard in the industry, SAS 70. It's like just throwing out impressive sounding names. And I was impressed, you know, with those initials. It sounded like something. I have no idea what it was, and I still don't know what it is. I have no idea what SAS 70 means.
And I read that in the opinion. I'm thinking, what is this?
I don't know. But apparently it's one of these things like, you know, four out of five doctors recommend, you know.
Right.
It's SAS 70 qualified. And the judge is giving me these looks like, you know, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
You know, so Judge Burr writes an opinion, and he says, quote, unquote, the limits of Mr. Venditti's knowledge were vast.
That's a great way.
And he says, basically, this man can't testify as to anything that went on prior to Commonwealth receiving the records.
Right.
And we're not going to allow them in evidence. And Commonwealth's retort to that was, well, we wouldn't have bought them if they weren't good, which is the ultimate bootstrap. And
that's what they're used to getting away with.
It is the standard in the industry that this happens, and the fact that we bought them makes them our records, and we can therefore testify as to our records. Therefore, they should be admissible because in the business records exception to the hearsay rule, which means that you can admit into evidence your own business records if they're your business records, and you can testify to certain things about them, like they were made at the time. They were contemporaneously made at the time that the events happened, and that they're kept in the regular course of business and other matters to authenticate them. The fact that they're now Commonwealth's records means that he can testify to them, and they should be admissible because he testified to them, and, you know, they're Commonwealth's records. It was called the rule of incorporation. In other words, if I incorporate someone else's records into my records, they become our business records. When right. in actuality, they don't change. They're still the business records of the third party.
Well, what's more insidious about that is the scandal out of Texas with Linda Almonte. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
With Chase, and she filed a whistleblower lawsuit. And basically, she said that they mix and merge and screw up these records all the time and then sells them to debt buyers on accounts that have either been paid up or are still active. So for him to say, well, you know, this is accurate because we bought it, is just absolutely absurd.
That's exactly what they were saying. They were saying, this is accurate. You should accept it as accurate because of this incorporation rule. In other words, in computer terms, you have something called GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. Everybody
right.
knows.
Accounting.
Right. If you have bad data, you get garbage out. I mean, what the rule of incorporation says, it's garbage in, diamonds out. You know,
right.
you can't make something.
The GIDO rule.
Right, the GIDO rule.
I'm going to use that now when I go to court.
What is this, the GIDO rule?
The GIDO rule?
I can hear
I like
it now.
That.
And,
yeah.
I mean, when it went up to the Superior Court says, well, that's very eloquent, Mr. Matzkin, but there's no such
he
thing
as... He was the
as,
opposing counsel.
Yes, Mr. Matzkin was the opposing counsel, but there's no such... The Commonwealth has never accepted the rule of incorporation. In other words, they're saying, look, we don't care what you buy, you still have to prove it.
Right.
You know, just because you bought it, it doesn't make it something that it's not.
Right.
You know, if you buy a piece of coal, it's not a diamond. If you buy...
Right.
Crap, it's crap.
Right.
That's what the Superior Court...
And what amazes me is that they decided to go so far with this case.
That amazes me, too.
Why? Yeah. And there's cases that I read about around the country where they have gone so far, let's say, on a fair debt collection case where, you know, you get the $1,000 statutory damage. You pay, you know, maybe up front a few thousand dollars in attorney's fees and settle it. And I've seen some of these... people, debt buyers that have been sued or attorneys, and they say, oh, no, we're going to make this a test case. And all of a sudden, in the end of the case, they got to pay over the $1,000. Then they got to pay $50,000 in emotional distress and $100,000 in attorney's fees. And all of a sudden, it's not so funny anymore because they think that it's just the sheer arrogance, the way I see it.
Well, but
of these people.
They've gotten away with it for so long, and unfortunately, consumers are still out of the loop.
Yeah.
They just don't know that they have any recourse.
I don't know whether it was arrogance or stupidity or actually they thought that they had a chance. They did file a 50-page brief citing over 120 cases. And if you,
sure
if you
there.
Didn't read and analyze the cases, you might actually think that there was some merit behind this. But it took... 3 or 4 months to go through all that stuff. I remember asking for 2 extensions to write the brief. I got to the point where the Superior Court said, we don't care. We want you to file the brief. And it was very, very time-consuming to go through and find each fallacy with each particular case as it applied to my case. The cases themselves stood on their own merits. However, you cannot fit a round peg into a square hole, and
right.
that's what they were trying to do. It sort of looked like they should have prevailed until you actually read the case.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
Then, yeah.
When I was reading Judge Burr's opinion, and of course,
you know, often judges in their opinions will take, if you, I don't know, had you submitted a brief to Judge Burr?
I submitted three briefs to Judge
Burr. Okay. So a lot of the times that the judges are going to prevail, they'll take the brief submitted and parrot some of the language in that. But I'll tell you something, he really tore them apart. And I'm reading what he wrote there, and it was clear as daylight, and the reasoning was great. I mean, it made perfect sense. It flowed very nicely. And I said, boy, you know, this articulates what, like, I already knew and that I've been arguing, but he did it in such a manner that it is now given us a clear path.
Well, the Superior Court in Pennsylvania is what's called an error-correcting court, and if they don't find an error in the lower court's opinion, they will always uphold it. In other words, they would have had to have found that there were some significant errors in Judge Burr's opinion, which I thought made it surprising that they had appealed, because I could not find any clear errors in that opinion. And so the Superior Court said, we don't see anything wrong with this, and this is a valid way of deciding this case. And unless Judge Burr made some sort of serious errors in his opinion, this is what's going to hold in this case.
Well, the other point they brought up, which I thought was laughable, and Judge Burr did too, and the Superior Court did, was that they sent you a notice to attend, which is a subpoena. When you're a party to the case, instead of serving a witness with a subpoena, you send a notice to attend to the attorney. Didn't they send it like the night or the day before?
Yeah, I got it like the day before. And
for your client to be there, for Mr.
Matzkin was saying, well, she knew she had to come. And Judge Burr kind of scratched his head and said, well, maybe he didn't want to bring her. Maybe this was his trial strategy. And I said, well, absolutely. He said, absolutely, it's my trial strategy. And I said, you need more time than just the night before. You need more time than a day to bring a witness.
It has to be a reasonable amount of
reasonable.
Time.
And the statute says it has to be reasonable. And the Superior Court said, yes, that's not reasonable. It's an elderly woman. She's got to have some time to talk with a lawyer. She has to be able to prepare. You just can't, like, go, come, you know. You can't just send a car to the house.
Yeah, you can send the limo down there and get her driver over here.
Right.
Yeah, well, I thought that just underscored.
You should have kidnapped her and brought her in.
Well, you know, Mr. Rubin, why didn't you go down and pick her up? It underscored the absurdity of their position throughout.
They were saying because he knew from the arbitration that we wanted her, but we didn't tell you. We just,
right.
You know.
Yeah, so what? I want her too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Larry, thank you so much for coming in today.
It's been a pleasure.
It was great.
Yeah, Larry, thank you. I know that
You're welcome.
A bit of an imposition to come out to Westchester here. We appreciate you, you know, going through.